Hi Helen,
Hi.
it's Adrian here.
Hey Adrian, how are you guys going?
Yeah, good.
Great. Well, who's going to kick off with some
G'day, Helen.
Hi.
We can hear you.
Great, fantastic. Who's going to kick off with some questions for me? Oh, okay. Everyone goes silent this one.
How's the market doing?
The market at the moment in... Well, the market in Sydney at the moment, you're still getting – it's actually surprisingly, even with this all this talk about the bubble and everything, the commercial market has done stellar in the last auction for the for Burgess and Rawson, but from all these CBREs and Knight Frank's, all the reports have been that there have been no shortage of buyers for commercial properties in around the Sydney metro area, even though the yields are still low. The yields seem to be stabling at 4 to 5% net in the metro areas. We are seeing there is in the regional areas at the moment, they have been, supply has been a bit of an issue because I've spoken to several agents and the agents said that a lot of the vendors are holding on to their properties, which is interesting. So the market at the moment, I think it's definitely, we probably will see the yields tighten a bit over time, even in regional. I think we will see that because a lot of vendors are actually holding off from selling. So that will change, that will make the yields itself tighten. So that's a good thing if you're already in the market with good properties. And if you're not, then it's time to jump in. I've got a question here, came in from Calone. Can you please chat about commercial property valuation in general process? The reports you get back from the valuer, I heard it's like 70 pages, and what the valuation is based on, the lease or other yields for the area too. Okay. Number one, Calone, if you want a sample copy of what it looks like, send me an email and I will reply with a... I will reply with a valuation, so you know, for one of our properties, so you know what it looks like. The general process is, yes, not quite long as 70 pages, but quite standard, around sort of anywhere from 35, 40 pages to about 50, 60 pages. It depends on what's in the market. So basically, they list out all of those features of the property in the valuation report. So when the valuer goes out, it's always a site visit for a commercial property. So they will always do a site visit regardless. So they make it with an agent and they need to get in and they'll see all of the property. And then they'll do a comparison based on all the previous sales in the in the area, plus all of the previous rentals. Then they'll work out the net yield that you're getting on the property. And then the valuer will make a valuation. They will make a determination on what your property is worth at the moment. I do have to tell you that valuations are very conservative, even in the commercial space, and the reason for that is the tightening of the lending criteria. So that is actually getting valuations are coming in lower, and valuations are also being very, very conservative at the moment. The report itself, once you pay for a valuation, and you always have to pay for the valuation as part of your loan process, you actually can request for a copy of the valuation because you've paid for it and it's technically yours, even though the bank do hold on to it. If you do not request it, it's not automatically given to you. A lot of the time the bank just hold on to it, so it's worthwhile to actually request it. And basically at the end of it, they will say, based on your yield, how we find the risk of this property in comparison to what's in the market, we either confirm the purchase price or we think the new value is this. They have never seen a time when the value is they have never seen a time where the valuer is actually said, no, this property is worth more than what you're buying for, which often the time you're buying below market, it is actually. So is the whole lease taken into account or only percentage of it? The whole lease is taken into account, Calone, and because it's a valuation, it is not part of the credit calculation. Where the lease is shaded back, like the income from the lease is shaded, it's actually shaded back by the credit department of the bank, nothing to do with the valuer. So the valuer is a separate independent valuer, and they're a separate independent body, but they are part of the bank's panel and approved valuers. So they don't actually do anything on the income. They don't shade any of that back. Yes, good-looking guys, the valuers. Yes, they tend to be. Or they have to try to impress people with their personalities. That's what Shane was saying. Callum's got a follow-up question. Where there's multi-tenanted properties and one unit is vacant, is evaluation just based on the units, the tenanted units? No, the evaluation is based on the whole building. So it's based on the market rent or the market rent that it can achieve. But the valuer will actually make an educated guesstimate or an educated estimate of how long it would take to tenant that property, and based on the market and what other comparables are getting in the market, and then they'll make a determination of the valuation. So the it's not taken into account as in that it's vacant. It's more taken into account how much yield it's how much it's going to get. What if there is a rental guarantee in place for the vacant unit? Would it be taken into account? It will be taken into account, but the valuer will also do a comparison of what other people are getting in the market at the moment as their rentals, and also take that into account as well. So hopefully that's helped. So the valuer process do take up to about 10 days to happen, so just be aware that it does take 10 days. So from the time the bank orders it, it could take anywhere up to a week for the value to go out, and another 5 days for them to produce a report. So it's not like a building report that gets produced within 24-48 hours. It actually takes 3 or 4 days for them to actually produce it, and once they produce it, it can sit on the bank server. So they basically upload it to the bank server for another 1 or 2 days before the bank says, right, we've got the valuation in. So usually when they escalate the matter, which is what your broker will do as part of the process, is that they'll try to get the valuer to deliver a report within 1 to 2 days. It's not, sometimes it's successful, sometimes it's not, and therefore you can speed up the valuation process by a week instead of 10 days. At the moment, we're seeing that it definitely takes 3 to 4 days at least, at the fastest, for the valuers to go out. Yeah, and that's after, and bear in mind that if you do with valuations, you have to pay for the valuation report. So you have to pay for that up front before the valuer is ordered. So if you decide that the bank will come back to you with a quote, so say a property might be, say, $1,500 for, you have to actually have that money in that account. So they'll say either they're taking it out of a credit card or they're taking it out of an account if you already bank with that bank. And once they've got the money, they will go and order the valuations. So hopefully that's helped to clarify that. Any other questions?
Yeah, hi Helen, it's Adrian.
Hi Adrian, how are you going?
Yeah, good. I was just wondering, you said the valuation was in this instance about what, $1,500 or so. Is that the typical amount that you would pay for a valuation, or it depended on the actual building?
It depends on the building. So yeah, it depends on the building. So for example, I bought a small property up in Cairns. It's $140,000. It's $900 for valuations, which I thought was actually quite high. Because I thought $900 just for them to go out to see a strata office, or not retail, seems a lot. But we've had valuations where it came to multi-tenanted buildings, and it's like the purchase itself was $1.6 million, and that was around $2,000 for that. And we've had quotes for some of our buildings that we've looked at, and where they've come back at us and said $7,000, and we've got back to them and said you have to re-quote because we're not paying $7,000 to get a building that's valued. So evaluations itself is actually quoted by the bank, so there's no real guideline I can give you on what it will be, but I can tell you that rough estimate you're looking at about $1,000 to between $1,000 to $2,000. Yeah, that's typical range.
Yeah, and also you said something about being able to access it. Does that mean you can take a copy of it to keep your records, or an electronic copy?
So the bank will give you an electronic copy, but after they've actually processed your loan. So you don't get a copy of it before that. So the bank gets the first go. So they look at it firstly. So they'll see it first. And once they see it, they process your loan and approve your loan. Once that's done, you can request a copy of your valuation. So they don't release it to you and then say, by the way, we're going to process your loan. They process your loan first and says, yeah, per the valuation, we are going to be able to give you this loan. We confirm we give you full approval for the loan. And once they've given you that, you can request for a copy of the valuation.
Yeah, I was just wondering, why would that be the case? I mean, why wouldn't they, if you're paying $1,000 and $2,000 for something that you may not even purchase, they're charging you for that, so why wouldn't you be able to have access to that even prior to?
It's just the way that you don't get access to the actual, you don't get access to the valuation because it's technically the process document of the bank until they've looked at it first. So they get to look at it first before you get it.
Yeah, I understand that. But once they've seen it, can they give it to you immediately after they've seen it?
Well, it's usually part of processing the loan as well. So they'll see it, they'll process the loan, and then they'll tell you that they've, the loan's approved.
Yeah.
And then you can have it. So it's all done in one process.
So in the case where they don't approve the loan, are you up for the cost?
Yes, you're up for the cost regardless, but they would approve. They would always approve the loan subject to valuation. So the loan is approved subject to valuation, and once the loan is approved subject to valuation, you just have to wait for the valuation. If the valuation comes in shorter, so it comes in lower than what you've paid for or you've agreed to pay for, then it will then they will come back to you and say the valuation is not, say for example your property is $700,000 and the valuation came in at $650,000, they'll say per valuation, the bank will say per valuation it's $650,000. We're prepared to only offer you 70% of $650,000, and the new loan amount will be this amount. So they'll give you the new loan amount. They will send you a copy of the valuation because obviously they're changing the loan amount, and then it's up to you to do one of two things. You can take it and realize how much now you have to come up with an extra $50,000 to do the deal. Go back to the vendor and ask them to give you a discount, and they may or may not agree. They may give you partial discount, they may not agree at all, and I've seen all of these circumstances, and then at which point you've got to make a decision. Are you going to walk away from it, or is it something you want? And if you walk away from it, potentially you've lost some legals, you've lost your valuation.
You've lost it, but you can mitigate it though down the track, I suppose, can't you?
Yeah, and look, I've got Shane who wants to jump in and add some to that input as well. So Shane, please.
No worries. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can all hear you.
Good stuff. Look, one thing I found with valuations that's often beneficial is to try and maintain the flow or the control of the information, the flow of that information, to maintain the control of that. So one thing that we've found that's been very successful in properties that we've had dealings with is to actually find out who the panel valuer is for the lender that we're going with, instruct the valuer independently of the bank to get a valuation done, and then once you've got that done, you can give it to your bank. Some banks will like that, some banks won't. It can be a bit of a mixed bag, but generally speaking, that's worked as well. What it's done is that you've got that document, you get to make some payments with it, and then you basically hand it over to the bank. So it's just been helpful for us, and sometimes it saves money as well.
Okay, so thank you for that, Shane. So Shane's idea was say find out who is on the panel and of valuers, and then once you know who is on the panel then and who's going to be the valuer, then you can instruct him or get in contact with him and instruct him or work with him to actually get to that valuation. Am I correct, Shane?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, sometimes the family has got a better response from valuers dealing with a client on an individual basis, and you can nuance the instructions somewhat better than just going to a mass valuation order in a machine or from a bank book.
Yeah. Yeah, so the thing is that, so this way that you could get a more favourable valuation or that you can actually get access to information earlier. So all good points. So that you can put yourself down as the contact person for the valuer. I've been called before just because they didn't know who else to contact and I've referred them to the agent. But yes, if you are down as the contact person, then they will contact you and you can go from there once you know who that valuer is. So any other questions? And Kalona, I hope I answered your question. Is valuation 1500? It's anywhere between 1000 to 2000, sometimes more depending on the size of your property. Okay. Anyone got any questions, jump in. Otherwise, I'll just, I've got another question come through. Yeah, yep. What usually is the cost for a property and for a pest and building report, and the second time inspection usually done by one or two people? Okay, so pest and building is usually done by, if possible, by one company if they're licensed to do both. In commercial property, you need to find someone who's licensed to do commercial pest and building to do it, because there's a different license to doing residential, and it's usually done by one person. If you're in Queensland, you need to do pest and building. If you're in other states, you don't always need to do pest, and if you do have a warehouse, so where it's just your concrete slab and your roofing, you may choose not to do actually any pest at all, because it's just concrete. You're probably not going to get any pest in there. It is just in Queensland, most people actually prefer to do, it's a recommendation for properties, all properties, to do pest and building, just because of the nature of Queensland, especially in North Queensland. But I know that if you're in if you're doing it in Victoria, if you're in Victoria or New South Wales, we've often just done building report, which is more important. The most important is your building report. Any of the other damages such as termite and things like that, most of the time in a commercial property, when it becomes notice, it's fixed by the tenant or the landlord. So those things are nipped in the bud fairly quickly. And there's often less structural issues, because where are they going to attack? Yeah. So follow-up question from Kelvin. Under what scenario or to what type of properties do you recommend checking out a property or area in person in addition to getting the report? Okay, so when you have a building report, what I would do is I'll actually get the building report first before I actually go to the inspection of the property. And the reason for that is I want to be able to cite the areas the building inspector has told me that is faulty, so that I can see how faulty it is on a scale of 1 to 10, whether it is real structural damage or structural issues that I need to fix or the vendor needs to fix, or whether it's just minor issues that is not really going to affect the business or my property in the long term. So there might be wear and tear. There might be some water damage is your other issue, that main issue, but water damage can be rectified. And the vendor will often do that, and it may not be... it might just have been that issue at the time and it just never got rectified, whereas other it's a one-off, whereas if the ward obviously is too wet and everything, it's different. Yeah, all the time. So I always go around and just look at the property with the building report, and that's the best way to see the problems and actually talk to the agent at the same time about it. Yeah. Hopefully that's answered your question. How long does it take to, about, it takes them 1 to 2 days, sometimes 3 days to get out to your property, and once it's done, it takes them about 24 hours to get it to you. Yeah. Has anyone else got any questions? So just wanted to have a, just a quick chat regarding properties that are single tenant versus multi-tenant properties. I've had this debate about the different properties, and I've got students that are looking at both, our students are buying both, so I want to just have a quick chat about it. So the properties, both of them are good, and they're both, if they're getting the same yield with the same solid tenant, they're both good. The main thing is that you've got a property that has got one tenant in it is going to be more your set and forget. It's going to be set and forget because you've only got that one tenant. It's very little management. You can manage it yourself. So that's the upside to it. A property that has multi-tenants have the fact that you are never going to experience vacancies in the sense that all of your tenants are going to vacate. So the property is always going to be self-supporting. Even if you lose one tenant, it's going to have, you know, 80-90% full. Because you only ever want to manage it to the point where if anyone tell me you only have one ever vacancy, so that there's that creates that bit of a nicheness. So if a prospective tenant's looking at it, you always go, okay, well, I've only got one, so I either take this one or it might be gone. So that kind of feel to it. And in the long term, with a multi-tenant, you can tweak it a little bit more because tenants own proportions of the building and they have common areas, which you as a landlord has more control over to tweak. So therefore, if you can tweak it in the future, it's got higher capital growth. In a set and forget property, you can manage it yourself. You don't have to worry about it. The tenant does most of the maintenance. And if you in the future you want to tweak that property or do something to it, you actually have to change the lease or give them a new lease because of it. And then from there, if you wanted to add or take back some land, you might have to agree to a reduction in rent before you sort of do the addition and then increase that in rent. So those things are factors. But again, it is yields driven and also specifics. So I think that personally for myself, that everybody, if they're in that commercial property journey, should have a multi-tenanted property in their portfolio at some point. If you can get to that point, that would be really great. So even if you start out with just a single tenant property, you get to a point where you have multi-tenanted, because a multi-tenanted property is going to take a little bit more effort in the long term, but it's got so many things you can do to it in the long term that for the future of that property and the future of your portfolio, it is actually a good direction to move into. So just bear that in mind into the future, even if it's not something you start with. Yeah, so has anyone got any questions regarding those 2 points? So even though it might seem like if you have multi-tenanted, it might be a bit of a headache in the beginning, once you actually get the tenancy right, it actually can also be set and forget. It just takes a little bit of time and a little bit of work to actually tick it over. Okay, so I've got a follow-up question. So if the property is multi-tenanted and not strated, is it worth to strata yourself and try to sell it one or more later, or is it only worthwhile to do it in metro but not regional? Okay, you can strata the property at any time. The only thing is with strata is that you've got to do it right before you sell it. So there's no point for you to strata and sit on it. And the reason you don't want to do that is once you strata it, you actually pay multiple rates. So right now, if you have a property that has 3 or 4 tenants in it, you're paying one lot of rates. So one lot of council rates, one lot of rates. So that, say the rate was $2,000. By the time you turn that into 4 different properties, you now have 4 lots of rates. So you have 4 lots of potentially $2,000. So that property, the outgoings of that property becomes $8,000 versus $2,000. So unless you are going to sell it within the next 3 to 4 months, then I wouldn't go through the strata process. If it's your intention to do it quickly within the 12 months, then yes, go through the strata process, but just be aware that as soon as you do that, you've got to set your strata levies, you've got to set you've got your rates coming through from the council, which means that now all of a sudden, if you're not paying for the outgoings, if you're paying for the outgoing, you've got more expenses, and tenants that are paying for outgoings may not necessarily be paying for outgoings if you are moving to strata, because technically you are meant to give them a new lease, because their old property or the old premise that they occupied no longer exists, because the title has changed on it. And as a result of that title changing, you actually have to give them a new lease for a new lease for their part of the building. So they might be, you know, lot one of your lot, of your property, and that may come with it, you know, additional costs, which they may not actually want to be paying for. Because before they might be paying, you know, 30% of a $2,000 rate, and now they're paying a $2,000 rate on their own, which, you know, means that, you know, they essentially are getting, you know, $1,700 increase plus the strata, so they might be getting an extra $3,000 a year increase in outgoings, which some tenant may not be happy about. So do that right before you sell, and don't do it as something you want to sit on in the future to gain increases. Yeah, so hopefully that's clear and helped you out, Sir Callan, with that question. Any questions regarding that stratering or the multi-tenant versus single tenant? All right. Just because I'm down in Melbourne, and I'm actually going to meet a few students here in the next few days as well. I've been looking at some properties all along the way, so I'm still keeping my eye on Wagga at the moment. Wagga has had quite a few properties for sale, but still not delivering the yields that I want. I really do like Wagga as a town. It really does deliver its own, although it's got terrible internet. It holds its own. It's got a lot of key drivers. The yields are still, though, too low for a regional town, so I'm still keeping my eye on Wagga. I've spent a bit of time this trip in Seymour because of the property we just recently bought and went to view it, but just also to spend a bit more time around the town. Seymour is going to be one of those areas that will pick up as the as Melbourne expands. There is definitely a lot of development down the Mornington Peninsula, Hastings Way. A lot of industrial, a lot of warehousing getting developed, especially the smaller warehouses as well. The local agents here have actually said that it's actually very popular for guys to keep their trailers or their boats, and sometimes they're going with their mates to actually rent a small warehouse so they can keep all of their essentially larger items or toys. So it's been really easy for them to actually rent it out, even if they are vacant. And there's recently been a small development of 28 warehouses, where it pretty much sold off the plan within the first month. So definitely there's that demand, even on the outskirts of Melbourne. So that's a good sign to see that, you know, even vacant properties are getting rented, so that class of property. Has anyone else got any questions? Any thoughts on Shepparton as a commercial property location? Jane, Shepparton is actually not bad. Shepparton has become a bit flat in the last few years. I looked at Shepparton about 4 years ago at a hairdressing salon within an alley off the main street, and Shepparton's had quite a few larger shopping centres that went up for sale over the last few years as well. The problem with Shepparton at the moment is that it has been a large town, but up until now, it's just the draw card is people are not stopping by there. It's a destination town. So the town itself has become a bit stagnant. So whether that can pick itself up in the next couple of years, it remains to be seen. Their retail is not doing hugely well in Shepparton. So I will be sticking to trades over there, or if you've got multi-tenant over there is an option as well. Yeah. I definitely do try to go past Shepparton once in a while in my road trips, because it is a large town and worth keeping an eye out for it as well. You are getting higher yields at Shepparton because the market is a bit flat there. So hopefully I've answered that question, Shane. If there's a follow-up question, please let me know. Great. Okay. Hi, Remy. Remy's got a question about what do I think about offices in the St Kilda area, particularly Kilda Tower on One Queen Road. They are – okay, so I have to tell you guys this horror story about a lease on one of the properties in St Kilda Tower. And this is one example of the – you don't see this very often, but this is one example where the tenant absolutely screwed over the landlord. And it is a legal tenant, so when you get a legal tenant, you have to make sure that you actually have your lawyers dealing with this lease. But it is a legal firm, a small legal firm in this office, and they have a corner office, which is actually the office itself. And I looked at the specs, it was really, really nice. So they've got windows on both sides. And it was a six-year lease. And the six-year lease with they had no rental increases in there and no bond. And plus, the tenant got a six-month rent free, but to be paid out as 12 months half rent over the first 12 months. And then they capped the increase in rent at market rent after the 6 years, only 5% increase. Plus the vendor has to, or the landlord has to pay all the outgoings. Now, for a building like that, if the vendor was paying for outgoings on a size of that, because that one got a particular size, they were up to, I calculate the other, about close to $9,000, and the tenant's only paying $15,000 a year. So that property, they're trying to sell it for about $170,000, is actually not worth $170,000, but, you know, I probably lower than what they purchased it for. And it's because, and the tenant has 2 6-year options. Now, I think that the tenant is going to stay there for the rest of the 12 years, and I think the vendor is not going to be able to move that property, because if someone is going to buy a property that's giving them less than 5% yield, they are not going to be able to want this tenant in that property. And it's probably one of the leases that is most skewed to the tenant I've ever seen. And I think that they'll have a battle selling that property. But if the tenant for some reason can move out, or does move out, then the property will actually significantly increase in value, because a new tenant coming in will actually put an extra $9,000 to $10,000 into the landlord's pocket, because you could get a new tenant easily paying at least $15,000, if not close to $20,000, plus outgoings, which means that the property will increase in value. So one of the things, I guess, as a savvy investor, from my point of view, I looked at it, and from a commercial point of view, you could look at it, you could say, well, I could possibly take that lease to a solicitor and ask them, on what circumstances can I break the lease or not give my tenant the option to not allow them to have the option. Now, remember, your tenant is a legal firm as well, so they'll probably kick up a fuss and they'll probably want some kind of compensation. But I wondered to myself that whether it's actually possible to break that lease, because I certainly would do it. And as an investor, if I found a way to remove the tenant, I would actually purchase that property at a lower price, because I think it's below market at this price due to the lease, and then work out a way to break that lease and re-tenant, and then be able to create that extra equity in that property. Now, anything in this world can be done. It's probably going to cost some to actually break that lease, pay the tenant out, but come to a negotiation with the tenant. But I would rather do that then have the next 12 years taken up and have the property not grow in value. So hopefully that's too long to answer a question to you, Remy. But in terms of St Kilda and 1 Queen's Road. Look, some of the properties in there are definitely worth buying because but I wouldn't buy an internal office because they have internal offices in there that is doesn't have much appeal. I like offices that have windows, and offices that have a lease that the tenant pays outgoings is very important for a building like that because they do actually have they have high outgoings. So you want to have a tenant that does that. So hopefully that helped. If you want further information, just send me an email, Remy. I've just answered Vince's question. Does the landlord self-manage this of that particular property I talked about? I don't know, actually. The question is I don't know because it's actually held in their self-managed super fund when I looked at their lease, and I believe that they're actually an elder couple, and I think that they've been trying to sell it for a while. So I actually haven't asked that question to the agent. Remy said, what yield can you expect the type of offices? So you can expect anything from your 7% going upwards. So your 7, 8, and even some circumstances 9s, but I find the 9% are usually things on much shorter leases, so about 1 year leases. So so 7 to 8.5 to be conservative. Yeah. Okay, so Callum's got a question. Do you always take over the existing lease or may draw up a new lease when you buy a commercial property? You always take the existing lease. Where there's times you draw up a new lease is when the tenant is about to, their lease is about to run out, or the tenant has an option like that they may want to exercise earlier on. So if that's the case, so for example, you're buying a property and they've got 6 months to go before they exercise their option, or 9 months, and the tenant says, yes, I want to exercise my option early, then you can say, well, how about instead of exercising the option, we give you a new lease. And that circumstances, you can offer them a new lease. Any other times, you can offer your tenant a new lease at any time, but you have to give them some kind of incentives. So in sometimes it doesn't make it worthwhile to actually offer them a new lease. You're better off to actually give them a new lease later on without giving them the incentives you otherwise would. But the lease, you do take the lease as it is. There are certain tweaks you can add to the contract, but the lease usually take as it is, unless the tenant agrees for the variation. And usually that requires some kind of incentive. So for example, if you had a tenant that was 2.5 years into a 5-year lease and you wanted them to sign a brand new 5-year lease, then you might have to consider giving them 3 months rent free in order for them to sign a brand new 5-year lease. And often when you're presented like that to the tenant will take that option because they're getting basically, they're planning to stay anyway. They are getting 3 months rent free, nothing. And they're already set up, so essentially not costing them anything. But you've just got to realize that whether you can actually wear that cost. And the vendor doesn't wear that because, and you as a purchaser does, because you want the new lease, whereas the vendor can sell it on its own, that lease. So hopefully that's answered that question as well. All right, guys, any other questions? Right.
Helen.
Yes.
June here. Yeah, just continuing on from where you just left off there. So the lease just is coming up for renewal, and you want to make some changes, which are going to obviously be in your favour, okay? And so you say to them, okay, we'd like to change the lease, and yep. You do that. What can stop that from happening? You're going to tweak a few little things to ensure that you get the value, and maybe the tenant may not see that when they see the new lease. Can they reject that lease, or do you just go into a negotiation phase, as you were speaking about?
Negotiation. If you're giving them a new lease and they're at the end of their current lease, then you've got more negotiation power. You're in the middle of the new lease, if they're like in the middle of like 2.5 years to go or 2 years to go, then there's no incentive for them to sign a new lease with you unless you give them an incentive. So you really have to offer them an incentive for them to sign up a new lease.
Yeah, what I was going from was that they're currently happy with the lease, and they're presuming that the renewal will be the same lease. Say, for example, it's been
yep.
going for 2 years, and they're getting a renewal for 2 years, and they're very happy with that.
Yep.
And you come in and you say, well, you know, you're not as happy because you want a better yield. So how do you go about that process? Obviously, it's negotiation with the tenant. And how do you negotiate that? I mean, you negotiate directly with the tenant, or you do it via the real estate agent?
We have to get a market appraisal done by the agent to see whether the market rent has changed before going to your tenant. So if you want to change the actual rent on it, you need to get a market appraisal.
Okay.
So if it's just, so for example, they've had 3% increases each year and it can't continue to go.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the 3 years, you go, okay, well, I want to put the rent up by 5%. And then you're like, okay, well, if you do, then you have to get a market appraisal. You can't just say, oh, look, I'm going to put it up.
Yeah, if that market appraisal suggests that you should be putting it up because it's gone up from the previous 2 years,
yeah.
And you've got every opportunity to do that and exert that, haven't you, without
yes.
actually giving any...
Well, you show them the market. You do have to show your tenant the market appraisal. It's always shown to the tenant.
Yep.
And then they tell the tenant.
Yeah, and the market appraisal...
And the tenant can say, look...
The market appraisal, though, has to be done by you. How does that get initiated? Do you initiate that through your agent, or if you're doing it yourself, you would do it yourself, obviously.
If you do it yourself, you have to get comparatives, or alternatively, you pay an agent to do a market review for you.
Yeah. Yeah. What would that be? What would something like that be? Just, I know it depends on the building, so forth, but what's an average cost?
$200 or $300 to start with.
Yeah.
So we had one of our properties in North Sydney. We had a rental appraisal, and it cost us about $250, I think. Yeah, by an agent.
Yeah, and when you got that appraisal, did that assist you in enabling what you wanted to do with the lease?
Yes, it did. So our rent in North Sydney went from 40. Well, it could have gone to 60,000. From 48, what the tenant was paying, but we actually decided that it was going to go to 58,000. So we didn't initiate the full amount, and we actually expected our tenant to negotiate with us. So we were fully expecting to even take a little bit less than that, but he didn't. So anyway,
The other question I have is in regards to what your thoughts are about. Commercial property in coastal areas, such as the one over in Lakes Entrance at
where?
Kent, those sorts of Lakes Entrance,
yeah,
the Lakes Entrance one,
yeah,
yeah, and other ones, like that, where it's it's seasonal, What are your thoughts about that? I think that had a few, it was multi-tenanted, I think.
Yes, it was.
There was two retail. Yeah. I think. What are your thoughts about places like that where it's seasonal, and there's high volume at certain times of the year, obviously when there's holidays. But what about the other times? In terms of retail, particularly.
My thing is that if you have a property that services the local community, then you don't have to really worry whether it's seasonal or not. So if you look at that property, particularly in Lake Entrance, it has a real estate agent and a beauty therapist. So the real estate agent services the local community. The beauty therapist, the bulk of her clientele is going to be the local people, and some of it will be the visitors coming through. So she will be really, really busy at the summer months or during the holidays, and then in the other times she'll just have her normal clients. So I don't think she's particularly affected. If you have something like food, or if you've got something that is more seasonal, let's just say even places that are sort of like your knick-knack shops or your homewares or your clothing stores, all of those might be affected a little bit more. So those things, then you need to look at the lease or whether sometimes in these leases, like places in Ellie Beach, they They have leases where it's seasonal leases. So during the months when they're really, really busy, they actually pay more. And the months that are quieter, they actually pay less. Overall, it's the same amount, but it's just structured differently.
Okay.
Yeah. But I don't think for that particular property in Lake Entrance, it actually mattered because of the tenants in there. I always try to find tenants that will service the local community and that the anything they pick up as part of the tourism is bonus. Shane, you had another. Shane, you had another question. Did you want to type it in, or do you want to jump in and ask?
Hopefully, you can hear me.
Yeah.
So, just with the process of having a property that you're going to get some tenants into, and then you employ or engage an agent to do that for you, and then you self-manage after. If you do that in residential, it probably wouldn't work, but it's obviously central and commercial. What's the process of doing that? You just instruct the agent to find the tenant on a set fee, and then they self-manage after that. Is that called something, or is it just a straightforward find the tenant process and not what you need?
Okay, Shane, firstly, I can't quite hear you properly, but I'm going to try to answer your question. But gee, if you mind typing that out for me, just in case, I didn't answer it in full. So the question was, what happens, you know, when you get a tenant and then you get the agent to manage it and then later on you want to manage it yourself? I got that first bit. So I would always say, look, if you are buying a property, it's your first commercial property, you get someone else to manage it for you in the first 2 to 3 months. If you rent someone else to manage it for you in the first 2 to 3 months, then everything sets into normal. Everything's normal. You've got your head around the actual property. You've bought a property, the repayments, all of those things start to settle down. And once that's all settled down, you can give the agent 30 days notice, or sometimes it's 14 days notice, depending on what the management agreement is. And then you can just tell them that you wish to manage the property yourself. And at which point they will hand over to you everything that they've done. And then they'll transfer the bond to you, and then going from there. And then you can continue to manage yourself. Depending on when the last invoice was sent, you can continue to send it yourself going forward. So it might actually, but in the beginning, while it's that settlement period and you don't want to have anything falling through the cracks, you might actually consider that it's worthwhile to pay the agent to actually get it done. Yeah. So if I haven't answered your question fully, please type it in the box. Vince has got a question though. With all these road trips, are you home much? Well, I tend to take my home with me, so I've got both Max and John, my husband, here in Rosebud with me, and so with Shane, you've got a question, how much that would cost. So the agent usually charge somewhere around 5%. 5 to 6%. I've got my managing agents to charge about 4%, 4.5%, because we've got larger properties, and I also the students who are buying in the town that we've bought and using the agents that we've used, they're all getting our rates. The general cost, if you're getting a smaller property, which is, you know, something that's under 200,000, sometimes the agents don't like just dealing with small properties, so they actually give you a minimum cost. So for example, this property up in Cairns, I was actually thinking of getting the agent to manage it, but they charge $300 per month plus GST, and that's their minimum cost. And I call Knight Frank in Cairns, and they also have the same rate. So it's just, they explained to me, just to make sure that it's worth it for them, even though it's a small property. Otherwise they're doing the same amount of work and they're not getting any returns. So just find that out, especially when it comes to smaller properties, how much it will cost someone else to manage it for you, especially in this region where sometimes they don't just charge your percentage, they actually charge your flat fee as a management, and that might actually mean that you manage it yourself. I mean, the Cairns one will probably manage ourselves because I don't want to pay $3,600 a year on a property that's only giving me about $14,000. So it's all a proportion of it. But you should be testing somewhere around 5 to 6% as a cost. Yeah. a 5 to 6% as a management fee, so 5 to 6% off the rent. Okay, so there's a question regarding depreciation. How much are depreciation reports, and do they all differ? QS companies, BMTs, charge similar prices, and I'm worth shopping around and getting a few quotes. Definitely worth shopping around and getting a few quotes. So BMT can give you an estimation of how much the report will be and how much the depreciation will be per year. So if you email them the address of the property, they can do all that information. Email them the building report and the actual address, and they can give you a quote. And they usually come back to you within a day or so. So that's actually quite good. And Shane, and that's for finding a tenant. So finding a new tenant, no. Finding the new tenant, there's a letting fee. The letting fee is somewhere anywhere between 10 to 15% of the first year's rent. So depending on your lease term. So if, for example, the agent found a tenant for you and the tenant is a five-year tenant, well, they're going to probably charge around 15% of the first year's rent because they've only got one shot at this tenant. They're not going to be able to release it again in 12 months' time like they do in residential, so they charge a bit higher. That's why it's a little bit higher, but if what it is equivalent to is usually about a month to 2 months of rent, of your property's rent. So that's why it makes also worthwhile to actually get tenanted properties, because you're actually saving your costs on the properties of vacant properties of the prior of the cost of paying the agent to tenant that property. So Shiva has a question, says, has been much change to the online website since last year when you first accessed it? Yes, Shiva, there's been a few different videos that's gone up there, and also the new spreadsheet. So there's definitely a few different things. So just check through it. The different modules have had different updates, and there's been a couple of case studies as well. Shane, regarding sourcing a tenant, that's what the agent will do. They'll hit the database, they'll hit their database, and also advertise on Real Commercial and a few other websites, but mainly they're going to hit their database, and mainly through the grapevine or work with other agents to actually get your property tenanted. Vince, regarding your property, would I recommend you manage it or self-manage it? I say you can self-manage that property. Okay, thanks. No problems. Callum, can you search by yield on Real Commercial? I think you can under the comments box. Certainly on the keyword, there's a keyword box. You can put in your 9% yield or 8% yield, but there isn't a drop-down menu for it now. So you can definitely search, but you have to put it into the keywords. All right, guys, any other questions? All right, well, if you've got any other questions, you can always email me. I will get back to you. For those people who emailed me today, I will get back to you tomorrow. On any of the questions, but thank you very much for tonight, and I look forward to seeing you guys on the call. Thank you.
Thank you.